I'm Elizabeth Harrison in Providence, and as you just heard, Rhode Island can expect about another 2 inches of snow this morning, according to the National Weather Service. Meteorologists say the state has been largely spared the worst of the snowfall that had been predicted in this storm, and the storm instead tracked more easterly. As of midnight last night, TF Green had about an inch of snow on the ground. Woonsocket got 4 inches, but across the border in Foxborough, Massachusetts, residents were socked with 14 inches of snow. The temperatures are expected to warm throughout the day today, so what snow does fall is not likely to stick to the ground, says the National Weather Service. Rhode Island's economy continues to slowly improve. Rhode Island Public Radio's Scott McKay has the latest unemployment numbers from the State Department of Labor and Training.
Rhode Island's unemployment rate has dropped to its lowest level in 4 years. The state's jobless rate fell to 9.8% in January from 9.9% in December. January was also the third consecutive month of job growth in the state, which has struggled to emerge from the recession that saw the unemployment rate soar to 11.9% in January of 2010. Scott McKay, Rhode Island Public Radio.
The chair of the Democratic Governors Association says Governor Lincoln Chafee should turn Democrat. Governor Pete Shumlin of Vermont calls Chafee a thoughtful person with close ties to President Barack Obama. He says he would welcome the independent Chafee to the Democratic Party. Chafee says he is considering the switch. He faces his first re-election test in 2014, and early polling shows voters give higher approval ratings to his potential Democratic rivals, State Treasurer Gina Raimondo and Providence Mayor Angel Taveras. Chafee is a former Republican senator. He is currently the nation's only independent governor. A subcommittee of the Coastal Resources Management Council has denied Deepwater Wind's request to waive a $700,000 fee. As Rhode Island Public Radio's Catherine Welch reports, Deepwater Wind wanted the application fee waived for its offshore wind farm off Block Island.
After more than 2 hours of testimony and deliberation, the subcommittee voted 4-1 to deny the fee waiver. Deepwater Wind plans to stick 5 turbines a few miles southeast of Block Island. It is argued that the application fee should be waived since it has contributed more than $3 million to an ocean study. CRMC member Paul Lamont says the $700,000 fee doesn't impose a hardship.
They're not saying we're not going to set up these wind stations. All they were asking for was give us a break. It seems over excessive, and it may be excessive, but those are the rules and regulations, and we adhere to them.
Lamont says he expects the full council to stand by the waiver denial. That vote is not yet scheduled. Catherine Welch, Rhode Island Public Radio.
And Governor Lincoln Chafee has found some people willing to serve on the board of the troubled State Economic Development Corporation. Chafee says his latest nominees signal a new direction for the panel, including a commitment to helping small business. The EDC nominees include State AFL-CIO President George Nee, Sand and Gravel Executive Roland Fiore, and Rhode Island College President Nancy Cariolo. In sports, the Bruins beat the Toronto Maple Leafs 4-2. The Celtics will be hosting Atlanta this evening, and the Providence Bruins take on Scranton Wilkes-Barre. In college basketball, Brown will be hosting Penn.
Thank you. We're joined as usual by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome back as our special guest, the president of the Woonsocket City Council, John Ward. Thank you for joining us, John.
Good morning. My pleasure. Happy to be here.
Woonsocket recently became the latest Rhode Island community to ask municipal retirees for concessions in their pensions and health care benefits. Taxpayers are also being asked to contribute more as part of a 5-year plan for restoring the fiscal stability in Woonsocket. John, how's the outlook?
Well, I'd better have a positive outlook. We're really hopeful that the retirees will be able to see their way to approving this plan. We're approaching it in pretty much the same way Providence did, at least for the health care benefits. For the pension itself, it's a request that would match what the state did with the state retirement system, which is simply to freeze the COLA. There's no carving into benefits in any way. It's whatever your last check was is the same check you'll get into the future. We've gotten good feedback. Of course, we've gotten some negative feedback, too. There's some people that just object. But we're hopeful that they'll get together as a group and establish a class and get a representation so we can actually negotiate it. If we can manage that, then we will be successful, because the retirees are a major part of what makes this work. The second biggest segment is the employees and the change in the health care plan, which will be common between retirees and active employees. So with all of those aspects to it, we're optimistic but realistic that it's going to be hard work still.
Scott, as we know, Woonsocket is only one of the Rhode Island cities and towns that has been having financial distress. What will it take for these communities to move past this?
Well, obviously, we need a recovering economy. That's the first thing that should happen here. We have cities and towns, Woonsocket reminds me almost as the paradigm, West Warwick, these old textile communities that have never really found a new economic engine since they lost their manufacturing base.
Maureen?
Well, I mean, I think the real issue here is a more immediate problem in that these towns have to come along. I mean, economic development isn't going to solve the pension problem. But it seems to me that the state is being sort of a good overseer of this, encouraging these kinds of negotiations. And with the, you know, the possible outside threat of bankruptcy, my sense is that more and more towns are willing to realize that other towns are going to have to do this and willing to come along. That's my sense, John. What do you think?
I think you're right. And it really does shift how we approach government, and especially at the local level, and principally in related to retiree benefits. I mean, they were so easy to give away 30 years ago, and they're so difficult to pay for now. And Woonsocket, to its credit, I guess, but it didn't structure it properly. But we tried to fully fund our pension plan in 2002 when it was zero funded with a single bond. And if it were not for the market collapse, we would be probably somewhere in the low teens, much like West Warwick. The fact is we're in near 60% funded. So what we're trying to make up for now is simply the market loss. And the bonded portion is going to live with us until 2033. Had we not done that, we would be at probably 10-13%, and we'd be trying to fund a pension instead of trying to recover from a market loss. So we're in a little bit better position, I think, than some other communities in that regard.
Well, in other financial news, Governor Lincoln Chafee's proposal to cut the state's corporate tax from 9-7% over 3 years is drawing mostly positive reviews, but CVS Caremark is crying foul over the proposed cut of a tax credit that benefits the company to the tune of about $15 million a year. CVS is obviously one of the state's largest companies and based in Woonsocket. John, what do you make of this issue, and does cutting the corporate tax rate justify the governor's move to reduce the job development tax credit that helps CVS?
Not having run my fingers through the corporate tax return for CVS, I'm not sure exactly what the rate change means to them. But based on their reaction, I'm a little concerned, because the employment that gets them those tax credits up in the Woonsocket area or in Rhode Island, I think it often is at the lower end of the spectrum. And in many cases, it's related to what is a well spread out group of warehouses that CVS has in the state. And I'm fearful that if they decide to make a move as a reaction to this, their first move will be to look up on the Mass Pike or along Route 84 to build one of their regional mega warehouses. And that would effectively wipe out very stable laborers' jobs, so to speak, and clerical type jobs in the city of Woonsocket and the surrounding area. And that would be devastating to the community. It would just be awful. And I'm very nervous about how this is going to play out.
What do you say, Maureen?
I think we have to look at this. I mean, the total package is $16.4 million, of which CVS gets $15.4 million. So this is a carve out for them. And moreover, the quotas that were put in place in terms of, you know, the jobs and so forth are old. They haven't been reviewed. It's almost a static expectation, and then they continue to get this tax write-off. I realize it's risky, and I was interested in the Providence Journal, where they're kind of pushing a little hardboard ball, making sort of threats. And I understand the risks involved, but I really think, since we have to lower the corporate tax rate and we have to also think about small businesses, I think it's worth the review. I know it's a risky business, but I do think these kinds of exemptions targeted to large single industries have to be reviewed.
Well, let's get Scott in here. What do you think, Scott? Does lowering the tax rate for all corporations justify taking some of the benefit away from CVS?
Well, here's the problem. Look, if you're going to lower the tax rate, the money's got to come from somewhere. Now, in this state, nobody wants to raise the sales or income taxes, so you have to look at the revenue that's out there. Now, it's unfortunate, but what we have here with the CVS deal is a race to the bottom where states compete with each other for, frankly, corporate welfare. And that's what this is. Let's be honest. It's exactly what it is. And the problem is, just as Mr. Ward pointed out, once you have this larger company in your town, you can't lose them. So it's going to be a very difficult debate on Smith Hill, I think, because as a practical matter, you don't want to lose CVS or any jobs that they have in Northern Rhode Island. But on the other hand, you know, at what point are the rest of us taxpayers subsidizing these people with a very successful billion-dollar multinational corporation? At what point are we subsidizing them with our hard-earned tax money?
So I really think the debate is certainly worth having and see where it goes from there.
We'll close out the discussion by looking at revised data on how Rhode Island's unemployment rate dipped below 10% in December. That was the first time the unemployment rate had been in single digits in Rhode Island since 2009. But the figure is somewhat deceptive since a lot of young workers have left the Ocean State. John, we know Woonsocket and a lot of old line Rhode Island communities struggle to rebuild their tax base. What do you think should be done to help retain more young workers in the state?
Wow. Well, when I solve that problem, I'll solve global climate
peace,
change,
right?
And get world peace going, too. It's a very difficult thing to analyze because my own children moved out of the state. They're down in Virginia because that's where the job was that was offered to him. He went to BU, got out of there, and headed south because the federal government has grown so enormously that Northern Virginia is like Washington, D.C.'s office complex. How do you get them back here? You get them back here with good jobs. You get them back here with a good economy, and you have to figure out a way to target it so that it's something that's going to be long-lasting. And manufacturing went away a long time ago. That's over 50 years ago that they were really essentially gone, and we never really replaced it with anything that was trademark Rhode Island.
And we still do have some manufacturing, and people would say that's still an important part of the economy. But, Scott, what would you do to retain more young workers in Rhode Island?
I think we need to think a little more creatively. Boston, for instance, has a very good program where they partner the private sector with the public sector, and they're giving young entrepreneurial types, kids who are getting out of MIT or Harvard, giving them essentially free office space, having law firms, people to come in, show them for free how to set up a corporation, and really trying to use some vacant buildings in South Boston, some old warehouses, as kind of an incubator business to keep the young entrepreneurial types and techno geniuses in the city. And I think that would be a smart thing if Providence or the surrounding communities could set up something like that and do more internships. Have the corporate companies that are doing well here try to make life a little more friendly for some of our young graduates.
Maureen, yeah. You work with young people at URI. What do you think it would take to keep them here?
Well, I think they don't have to be from Harvard or MIT. And I think one of the things we can do is to develop a business strategy similar to that, but targeting small businesses, targeting IT, and providing these kinds of incentives for, you know, students from URI and some of the other colleges. And I think the other piece of that is to continue to encourage what the governor calls, and I agree with, a creative economy, where you really make this city and state a place that welcomes a diverse group of young people so that they can use their talent and creativity and have a fun place to live.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thank you for joining us on Roundtable. Scott?
Thank you.
Maureen?
Thank you.
And the president of the Woonsocket City Council, John Ward.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure being here.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoyed the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at ripr.org.